Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast Half Full Editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Weindrich. How are you, Dave?
All right, yourself?
Good. Gearing up for St. Patrick's Day, obviously just a few days out. One of the granddaddy drinking holidays on the calendar for spirits writers like ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. But, and you know, it beats things like National Moscow Mule Day, I think.
That's the funny thing. It was like one of the original ones. And now, like, every week, there's like a new holiday press release. You know, there's
like we need an excuse.
Right. And it gets confusing because it'd be like International Daiquiri Day, not to be confused with Daiquiri Day.
Yeah.
Or Rum Lime Juice, you know, Sugar Day. You know, it's not a bad thing for us. Every day is a drinking holiday, I think.
But, it means you get press releases a lot.
I was going to say a good excuse to make some drinks, but
keeps the PR business alive.
Absolutely. St. Patrick's Day, obviously one of the original, you know, real drinking holidays in our business. And we're fortunate to be joined by a couple of special guests today. We have Sean Muldoon from The Dead Rabbit. How many different awards have you guys won over the years at this point? I mean, there's no more room for Tales of the Cocktail.
You're adding a third building for the awards, I believe.
We also have with us today Tim Herlihy from the Tullamore Dew, the brand ambassador, and they're both authors of the new book, From Barley to Blarney, A Whiskey Lover's Guide to Ireland, which we've been long awaiting its release. So I think it'll be a very cool book for all people who love Ireland, Irish whiskey, or just want to take a really cool look through the history of Irish pubs. So thank you guys for joining us.
Plus, it's a beautiful book.
How long was the project in the works for this book? It's been...
How the book came about was I was going back to Ireland maybe once a year, twice a year, and I would have met up with Jerry Buckley from Middleton, and he just wanted to drive around and go to all these places in Ireland that he'd never been before.
Yeah.
Jerry being the Cooper, the massive Cooper in Middleton. And we'd planned this months and months in advance so Jared could take the time off work. And all we did was go to the old pubs, and we had a great time together. And
oh, that sounds like paradise.
Yeah.
I know Jerry, he's a companionable man, let's say.
Brilliant. And many times when we were doing this, we'd have bumped into Tim, who's
just hanging out, loitering.
Out by the side of the road.
Who's back in Ireland regularly. I mean, you're probably in Ireland more than you're here.
Don't tell everyone that. They're not supposed to know about all those trips. But I get back six times a year. So,
It just, every time we happen to be in a bar and we were just paying attention to the decor or the pints, whatever, Tim happened to be there. And Tim said, listen, this is getting ridiculous. We should write a book about this. Because he was back for distilleries, I was back for pubs.
Right. Mm.
And we all know Jack's a great cocktail guy. So we thought, right, why don't we put it all, I'm in the pubs, he's in the distilleries, and Jack's in the cocktails. Why don't we put it all together in one book?
Right.
So that's how the idea came about. But I would say that idea was probably 6 months before we put the idea to our book agent, who put it to the publisher. Right. And it wasn't an easy sell, to be honest.
It wasn't?
No. They wanted more distilleries than pubs, to be honest, and I understand the reasoning, but to me, when we were doing these tours, what we seen a couple of guys from Texas or whatever come bumping into and Slane Distillery. And what they want, once they'd seen the distillery and they'd seen all the wee distilleries around that area, what they wanted to do was go to the best pubs. They wanted a taste of Ireland, so I thought to do the book that has the best pubs close to distilleries is the way to do this, but it was hard to sell that idea to a publisher. They weren't all buying that.
It's not going
to
be hard to sell it to the public, though. I think
that's what I thought.
I mean, really, drinking your way across Ireland?
Yeah. That's what I thought.
That's what everybody likes. Yeah. You know, that's one of the beauties of Ireland. There's always a nice pub.
One of the things with the pubs is it's not necessarily the best whiskey bars. It's the old school hidden gem classic Irish pubs that we have in there. So they all have a bit of character, tons of charm to them, And it's in Ireland, so we've a lot of history with these pubs too. So we've great stories behind them all.
Well, it kind of shocks me that between, you know, the two of you and your partner, Sean Jack McGarry, who's, you know, one of the most talented bartenders in America, and obviously your partner in the Dead Rabbit Empire, that the three of you, that there were any pubs that the three of you hadn't been to already, you know, was that part of it? Like, was it surprising how many amazing bars there were in Ireland that none of you had been to?
Or? I mean, but the thing is, we're all going to the city pubs, we're all going to the best in Dublin, but it was the rural pubs, and we have, on social media and stuff, like especially on Facebook, we have a massive Irish following on Facebook, and they see if we put up a post like Irish breakfast and it doesn't look the way they think it should look, they'll be the people. I mean, anything that's
you
not,
call that Irish.
Yeah, we put up we created two Snugs booths for our extension, and these people, our followers in Ireland, were telling, oh, you need to christen them, you need to give them names, and they were giving us all the names and all, and it was like, I'd never heard of giving Snugs news, but they were telling us that's how you do it, and it's just they were telling us the pubs that we need to visit in their areas. So it was easily, we had 160 pubs to begin with, all recommendations from the public.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Not from books, from the public. And we visited, I believe,
100. We went, we did interviews and shoots in 111. And we went to all 100.
That's epic. And that's a lot of pubs.
But I think myself and Rebecca Dooley, before she came on board, I met her. She was working in London, and I met her in Dublin or something. And I think we did about 30 of those pubs before we actually did the tour, because I wanted to get a head start.
And she works for you at the Dead Rabbit too, and she helped, I guess, plan sort of the logistics.
So she was she phoned up everybody, her story was, I mean, she was phoning, she's a girl with an English accent, her father was Irish, but she's a girl with an English accent, just phoning some rural pub in Ireland saying, we want to do it, we're going to do a book. And there was two instances, all right, cut to the chase, what are you trying to sell? And then the other purple was the other person. It was a cracking little barmaid. Tim visited it. It was in Roscommon, and it was literally like, I can't even remember what it was called, but you walk in and it was like a convenience store at the front, and it was a proper wee Irish pub at the back, and it wasn't trying to be a speakeasy. It was like been this way 100 years, and the person that served you your groceries in the front walked literally behind the bar through a little curtain. And but when we phoned up that bar to see if they wanted to appear in a book, the woman just goes, I don't want to be in your book.
Were you able to convince her or no?
No, well, we went and we didn't think it. So we went and
bought groceries first. Bought a lot of groceries.
We didn't think it made. If we're going to cut it down to 50 pubs, we just didn't think it made.
Yeah.
And also because we wanted the pubs to be as close as possible to distilleries.
Yeah. Right.
And there's no pub in Roscommon. There's no distillery in Roscommon.
So. Yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there must be a couple thousand pubs in Ireland easily, right?
I think between 7,500 and 8,000 pubs on the island of Ireland.
That's a lot.
We've only included 50.
Yeah.
So we've a lot of enemies out there.
This is volume one of
volume one. You know, years ago when I worked for Esquire, I did their best bars, and every year we could only write up maybe, you know, 15, 20 bars. Mm-hmm. So we said right at the beginning, this is not the best bars of this year. This is our recognition of great bars in America, and we'll just keep adding to the list.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're on the list, you're on the list, you know, and that's all you can do. And you can just say, good bars, not good bars. Yeah. I don't have to write about them, but just anybody you write about, you know, it's a hall of fame. It's like these are worthy
places. Kind of feel like we're here in asylum in America until we have at least volume two ready.
Yeah, I can understand that. Well, I know if you went into Tom Berry's in Cork, they'd be vexed to not be on the list, because that is a wonderful bar.
One of the things you'd find, though, as well, even since we wrote this book, so we put this book isn't even out here yet, but when did we send this to the publisher?
July.
We finished our part of the book, the touring stuff. We finished it last October before last, and since then, one of the pubs is closed, which has been around 120 years.
Yeah.
So it was these two women in Bundoran and Donegal. One sister died, and the other sister just could not cope without her. She tried and tried and tried. It was in the family for generations, but she just gave up. Everywhere she looked, she seen memories of her sister. Mm-hmm. And so we included it because we thought it was an important, and everybody knows that pub.
Right.
And then there's another one in Ballycastle where the owner has died since. Another one in quite a crazy story. Tim lives in Drogheda. Do you want to tell the story?
It actually came up yesterday too. I was in LA and sitting, getting sushi, and sitting beside a lady who happened to be from Ireland. Who'd have thought? It's not just Irish pubs that are magnets for Irish people. It's sushi bars in LA.
The traditional Irish food,
yeah.
Sushi.
Yeah. On coming to an Irish pub menu near you, and we overheard each other. We got chatting, and I was there chatting about the book, and she was like, "Oh, is Birmingham's in Navan in there?" And I was like, "Yes." And she was like, "Oh, is a good friend of Mickey." And Mickey had passed away. He was the face of Birmingham's. And I was like, yeah, I remember the day he passed away. It was May 7th, because that was the day I was scheduled to go in and meet him. Unfortunately, he passed that day.
But what actually happened was Tim said we shouldn't cover this book, this bar in the book, because it's unpredictable. It's not open. He said it says it's supposed to be open right now. I've made my way to come here, and it's not open. He said if an American was to come and follow our advice, mm-hmm. and the bar is not open. So I happened to hear that the guy had died, and Tim had went next door to say, is the bar open upstairs? Is the bar next door open? And he said it should be, but they weren't able to give any more information. Oh. It ends up, and I'm not joking when I say this, the day that Tim called to the door, the guy was lying dead up the stairs.
Oh my.
Wow.
Mm. And probably nobody knew at this point.
So are you saying that Tim killed him?
We called Tim the Tim Reaper. But that's a true story. The guy was literally dead the day Tim called the door.
I've yet to earn that name, by the way. But, sure.
Well, I think the moral of the story is that buy the book, go to Ireland as soon as possible, because if you want to visit these bars, because you never know. And if anything, I think, sadly, we've seen over the last couple of years a lot of pubs closing in Ireland. I mean, do you think that trend has reversed, or, you know?
No, well, it's like we spoke to every single person about the difficulties and the hardships, and they talked about the old generation that would have frequented these pubs dying, and the younger generation not being into old man's pubs.
Right.
So they struggle with the generation that they served growing up has passed away and moved on. And also they talked a lot about drink driving, because you would have had the little farmer down the street would have driven a mile. Now the cops are really, really heavy on this, so nobody's going out because they're afraid of getting caught drink driving.
You're seeing it a lot, particularly in rural Ireland. Yeah. I feel the urban pubs are thriving more than ever, particularly the good operators. And a lot of these pubs in rural Ireland were the centre of the community. They were one-stop shop, so they were the grocer as well. Mm-hmm. They might have been the bakery, the undertakers, so that has evolved, and unfortunately some have died off in rural Ireland for many of the reasons that Sean mentioned.
We actually went to one, it was called McCarthy's Hotel in Tipperary. It wasn't much of a hotel, to be honest. Was there actually rooms there?
It's like
there
were rooms, but
anyhow, you might not want to stay in them.
He had the whole undertaker sign, and he told us he was still an undertaker, and we said, I don't believe you. Like, you've got to prove it, because I've heard that everybody's been undertaker. But so he brought us out the back, and there he was making the coffins out the back of the shop.
Okay.
Still to this day.
Well, you could get a job there, Tim.
Do you think visiting all of these pubs has changed the way that you run the Dead Rabbit? Like, do you think that it informed, you know, the way that you and Jack do things at the Dead Rabbit?
It was always what we wanted to do was bring as much of that as possible, like decor and personality to the bar as possible, but with younger, more dynamic staff, because a lot of these, and it's great to go and see, but it just doesn't work in a busy bar environment. You might see the woman behind the bar who's like 87 and it's cute and all this sort of stuff, and she's just, her head's just literally above the bar counter. It's cute when you really go and see it, but it doesn't work in a busy bar, or they're not using the POS, modern day technology. But we wanted to bring as much of that as possible without compromising what we're about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, in any of these pubs, you would never have a DJ. We have a DJ, you know, so it's you would never have a DJ. You don't even have background music in most of these pubs.
Yeah.
You don't have food in any of these pubs. Most of the good pubs that do good gas don't do food.
No food?
No food.
Yeah.
Like potato chips? Or
you make it that, or a toasted sandwich.
Toasty,
That's it,
The thing is, when you go to the Palace Bar, you say, what food do you have to offer? It goes, toasties, and you go... is that it? And he goes, yeah, two options. You got ham and cheese and ham. Or...
And the toasty is like, for the our listeners, it sort of looks like a waffle maker kind of, and right, and you press like usually white bread and you put the whatever, the cheese and ham in the middle, and you put it down.
It's already, like a George Foreman grill, basically. Right.
It's already pre-made, and it's in a package. They make it that morning, and it's in a plastic that doesn't burn. It's a special wrap, and they put it inside this thing, and it heats it up and melts it.
Like like an Irish empanada.
Yeah.
An Irish Jamaican beef patty. Yeah. I think that we have a lot of ideas, at least, you know, in America, about what, like, the traditional Irish pub is, but I think a lot of those misconceptions... Not actually,
they're American Irish pubs. We've
tried to do this, like, it's like a cocktail menu. There's something for everybody. Like, some of these pubs, if you were just to go to that one pub, you would think this isn't a top 50 pub in Ireland. But when it's put in the entire 50 list, you would see why it works, because there's a particular pub that comes to my mind that we were really debating about you this being the top 50. But I know for a fact that a lot of people in Cork absolutely love that pub,
and
it would have been a travesty had it not been on it for those people living in Cork. So we basically
you could never have gone back to Cork.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been, for people living in Cork, it's one of their favourite pubs, you know, and it's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's...
Was the deliberations about which bars made the cut, that must have been the hardest part. I mean,
there was a lot of...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Pubs in Ulster, where we're from, me and Jack's from. Tim's not from Ulster, but the reason, there's very little distilleries in Ulster. There's only two. So there was a lot of, where Tim lives, there was a ton more distilleries.
Right.
So there was a ton more information given around the distillery part where he's from, and a ton more given around the pub part where we're from. But Tim would have thought, like, there's a particular bar that, I'll just say it because nobody's ever going to probably hear this back in Ireland. There's a particular bar called the Crown and Shamrock.
Sure, of course, I love that place.
It's
my home away from home.
Dave and I go there every summer.
It's called the Shamrock because of the Irish connection. It's called the Crown because of the British connection. Okay. So it's meant to be a pub for Catholics and Protestants in Belfast, outside of Belfast. But it's got a ton of history. It goes back like 150, 160 years, and it's still got the stables where the horses used to...
Oh, nice.
And it's just the history behind the pub. And I thought, it used to be like Carrickfergus... And Northern Ireland was the main centre of Northern Ireland, not Belfast. It was Carrickfergus. And this pub was right in the middle of the road between Carrickfergus and Belfast.
Okay.
And it had the horses, the stables and everything. It still has the stables. And I just thought, there's too much history for this not to be included. But Tim would have thought, let's give it to somebody else. And I thought, nah, but that pub has to be there. You know?
Yeah.
There was a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah. No, but constantly on the tour, you know, the debate as you're going. Right. And I don't know if I should share this, but we had a little system, because you can't go, nah, not going to make it when you're in the presence of the publican. So I think one of our moves became, if it was good, full pint of Guinness. If it was, glass of Guinness. And that became our little tell system.
Yeah.
So.
And we also had, and I'm not going to say in the interview, we also had a particular American in mind who we think is a... If he had went to this bar, would he have liked it?
Yeah. Right.
A particular American, a particular cool American, and and if the answer was yes, he would like this. That sounds mad, but we actually did base it a bit on that. I did anyway.
Yeah.
And if he liked it, if I'd have thought he'd have liked this pub, it was in the list.
Well, it's cool. It's like
I've since told that person who that person is.
Oh, it's like an actual person.
Person. I've since told him.
It's me?
No.
But it could be. We've dedicated the book to you, know?
But it could be you. It could be either of you, you know?
Right. But it's not.
But it's
not. Do you find that the drinks varied very much from pub to pub, or is it fairly standard menu of...
So, like, to be honest, it was mostly Guinness.
Yeah, and I think we'd always suspected or seen or heard about it, but the gin craze in Ireland, particularly in the pubs, I think that was the surprise, that you were seeing gin and tonic menus in
Yeah, that was never a part of Irish life before.
And the surprise was the extent of it.
Yeah.
And they're getting more and more into Irish whiskey as well. It's
Do you see the regional things? When I first went to Ireland in the 90s, it was very regional, like which whiskey was drunk in which part of the country.
Or even Murphy's or Guinness.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That was all, you know, I would get in the center of Ireland, you'd get your Tullamore, and you'd get other brands along the coast and in Dublin.
And I think that's changed a bit because they're now starting to have a portfolio of Irish whiskey, go beyond just the region. Yes, they might stick to their favorite local distillery, but they're starting to have a depth of Irish whiskey there too.
Obviously, you know, a lot of the appeal of the Dead Rabbit are, you know, the amazing cocktails. You know, the second floor is, you know, cocktail menu. Did you guys see a lot of cocktails in Ireland or not really?
To be honest, no. And if people, the people in Ireland who are into cocktail bars, they sort of get, they take it thick that me and Jack don't visit cocktail bars because every time we're back, I mean, the best cocktail bars are here or in London. We don't really go to Ireland to see cocktail bars. And people would think, do you remember you were here and you needed people to come to your bar?
Right.
But it's just, I think the pints of Guinness and the Irish whiskey, I'd just rather go for what you're good at, and that's what you're really good at.
That's always my problem. I'm, you know, known for writing about cocktails, but even when I'm in London, I just want to go to the old pubs and have the cask ale, you know?
Yeah. I'm actually doing a pub tour in October, November, and London English pub tour with the cask ale.
Oh, you're going to have fun.
Yeah.
There's so many great old ones. And some of the touristy ones that you're told are tourist traps, you go in, and it's just great, you know? It's like, don't listen to those people. Just go.
Do you think that the pint of Guinness varies much from pub to pub, or is it fairly consistent? I mean, it's like it's all over the map in America, and I'd say the Dead Rabbit's probably the best, if not exemplary, one of the top five pints of Guinness in America.
So I'm going to be honest here, right?
Please.
That's what we're about.
Nobody's listening. It's just
Dead Rabbit is not the best pint of Guinness in New York. We are 100% determined to make it that way, but it's something that we're only addressing right now because we're only
pretty close, though, I'd say.
We're only in a position because of the extension. We've got the room now to do it, but we have went to the best bar for Guinness in probably the world, which is the Gravediggers, John Kevinus.
Yep.
Where's
in Dublin?
It's beside Glasnevin Cemetery. It's where that whole saying, going for a jar, if you've ever heard a jar being referred to as a pint, it comes from that bar. Quite appropriately, like right beside that, it's right at one of the entrances to Glass Diamond Cemetery, where Michael Collins is buried and stuff like that. Very famous cemetery in Dublin, the famous cemetery,
biggest in Ireland.
But one of the things right beside where they are is where Brendan Behan is buried, and see him on his headstone, there's an actual groove for a pint. So literally on his birthday and stuff, people go out and put a pint of Guinness.
Yeah.
It's like a 3-minute walk from the front door of the Gravediggers.
It's got to be done.
But the Gravediggers, the only way I can explain this to you, I watched Anthony Bourdain, The Layover. One episode is in Dublin, and he's in the taxi, literally just arrived, and he goes, apparently there's this great bar that does Guinness on the way into Dublin. And he says, I'm going to check it out. So that's basically what he says in the back of the taxi. And then, so it shows you the little timer, because he's only there for a period of time, like 72 hours or something, 48 hours. So the clock goes round and round and round. So he goes in and has his pint, and the clock keeps going round and keeps going round. And he stays there the whole day. It just shows you, I'm literally that night wasted at the bar, and he hasn't left it. He's just eating there pub food. And then on the taxi out, so the whole first day of that thing is spent in the Gravediggers. And the next, on the way out, he talks about the best pint in the world. It is an amazing pint of Guinness. Yeah. And we've been there, we've spoke to these guys, and it definitely is different than everybody else's pint. And you can even tell when you hear the way it hits the bar counter. It's the hollow sound that it makes. It's the way it settles. It's the length of time it keeps the head before it even gets topped up. There's something about the pint that is quite magical. We've been there, and we've spoken to the guy at length, myself and Gillian, and then Jack went back for a second without us. He basically said, when you take the place itself out of the equation. So you're in a bar and you feel, yeah, you feel you're in a pub. Take that out. Take the shortness of the lines out. Take the fact that you're not doing food through the same glass washer. He says that it really is all about how the glasses are washed. And this is his... Wow. His
interesting.
So we've watched... The way he washes his glasses is... All those bars in Dublin that do Guinness well, they've purpose-built racks behind, under the counter, under the bar counter. It's just trays of pint glasses. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you put out a tray, and that's it's just filled with pint glasses underneath the bar. The part where the bartender stands, right underneath that, is just filled with rows and rows of pint glasses, all dried. And it's not just in his bar, but what he does is he washes in boiling hot water, no detergent. And then he, as soon as he comes out, he puts them in cold water and then he lets them air dry. And he showed you the difference in all the glasses. Even if there's one little blemish on a pint, it really affects him. The same way it would have been about Jack years ago, about the garnish of a cocktail or something.
Right.
He sees things in pints that nobody else would see. He's just tuned into a pint, and he poured pints for us, and he showed us perfect pints versus imperfect. And it was all about the grease marks. You would never have thought.
Oh, that's amazing,
But the details, the way he thought about pints. Yeah. Pints was his bread and butter. It was all that mattered to him was the pint of Guinness. And they're well known for that one drink. So to him it has to be. But he told us, so what we're doing in our extension, where the kitchen went on fire, that area is going to be dedicated.
Obviously you guys took over the building next door to the Dead Rabbit.
Yeah.
Busted through the wall for the bottom floor, now the second floor.
So the old kitchen was 200 square feet at the back of the downstairs tap room, at the very back behind the little merchandise part. So we're dedicating that to glass washing. And
amazing.
There's going to be three glass washers. We're going to have detergent for one and non-detergent for another one. And we're going to twice wash pint glasses, dip in cold water, and air dry all around that room. Swift does the best pint against in New York City, and we want to be better. That's just the way it is.
I spoke to Danny McDonald, who runs Swift, and I know that he definitely adjusts the amount of detergent for the dishwashers. Like, that was one of the things that he said. He calibrates it differently than, like, the factory setting.
I mean, the health department here probably won't let you do without detergent at all.
No, so
right?
the way we're thinking is we're going to have one glass washer for cocktails and a dump sink for cocktails with the brushes to scrub out any Bloody Mary stuff or whatever. And then it's one glass washer with detergent.
Right.
One glass washer, no detergent. So it's coming out, being twice washed, dipped in the water, and then racks all over.
That should do it.
Should do it.
Yeah.
We have to use the detergent.
Yeah. In America.
And the other thing that he would have done was the water. Like, people don't take this stuff seriously, but he would have changed the water in the dishwasher like 10 times a day. So emptied it and refilled it 10 times a day. And then at the end of every night, descaled it with salt solution. He took the glass washing thing very, very seriously. And he told us that that's the only difference.
I feel like this, no pun intended, is a rabbit hole that Jack will go down obsessively, like, until, like, he gets it exactly right.
So. He knows, listen, myself and Gillian were there. We went through the whole thing. We seen the whole keg storage, the temperature, everything, the way he did it. But he just emphasized to us about the way you wash the pint glass and the way you dry the pint glass.
Well, with something like Guinness, I mean, that's really important, though, obviously. Because that's all there is, and Guinness is about the texture. That's what makes a pint of Guinness.
But if he the pints that he poured for us, see if he'd have poured them for any of you guys or us even, they were perfect pints, but they weren't perfect to him because he's seen a tiny little grease mark on one of the pints.
Yeah.
The detail, the way he thought about a pint glass, I've never seen. Anyhow, that's why his pints are the best.
Yeah.
Because of the extra attention he gives to his glasses.
Well,
that's
amazing. I'm looking forward to the new and improved Guinness pints at the Dead Rabbit. I thought they were pretty good to start off with, but I can't wait to taste.
Inspect your glass.
But you're right about Jack, because he will.
He will do it. Will.
Oh my God! I think it's
scary times ahead for everybody.
Also, the new downstairs at the Dead Rabbit is magnificent. To have that extra space. Really makes, I think, a huge difference.
My wife, Anne, thinks she saved the day. A guy came in one time to the bar and said to Anne, she was behind the bar, she knew we needed extra space. Everybody knew we needed extra space. The bar was way too small and too busy for the size of it. And it was a real mess for everybody involved. It was a mess for the guests coming. It was a mess for us because we didn't what can you do? Turn people away when they've...
Yeah, traveled. I know, it's hard.
So a guy comes in one day and says, I've seen that place is closed next door. To my wife, do you know where the do you know how to get a hold of the owner? So she passed that on to me immediately. And right away I said to the guys, right, we need this building. So yeah. She thinks, my wife thinks she got the building for us, but we needed it.
Yeah.
We needed it, yeah. For sure. So we opened the parlor part next week. The parlor extension, which is
I can't wait to see that.
The yeah. second
and actually 25 yeah. seats.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference.
Yeah, well, it only opens Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and private events coming in the back way.
Yeah.
But we need the space because now, instead of having 50 people, we can have 175 people downstairs.
Right. Yeah.
But you've still got that problem of people waiting on a table upstairs. Right. So yeah. It's only 48 seats upstairs. So this will help that one, is an extra 25 seats at weekends.
I can't wait until you've taken over basically the whole block up until, I guess you can't take over Francis Tavern, or you could, but you wouldn't be able to break through the wall.
No.
But basically go the other way
yeah.
and just take over all the other buildings on that street.
Hollow out the whole block.
Exactly, yeah.
Can't see it happening.
You never know.
5 years from now,
you never know.
They'll go up next. Oh. You know, it'll be the Dead Rabbit skyscraper.
Now, Tim, I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I came across the Buena Vista that made Irish coffee popular in America. They, in the 1950s, tried to add a second drink to their renown called the Velvet Viscount. And they said it was a popular drink in Ireland. I've never heard of it. And it was with Tullamore Dew, of course.
Okay.
Plus, I believe, Benedictine, creme de cassis, and cream.
Wow. That is...
I could be off on the Benedictine, but... Mm-hmm.
I thought it was only my family that drank that.
Yeah. That was a velvet. That's the velvet Rothbaum.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Which is a famous drink.
Of course, in our house.
In your house, mm-hmm. exactly. So, yeah, I didn't think...
I'll have to order one next time I'm back in Buena Vista.
First, you got to find somebody who's ever heard of it.
Yeah, right. I think they'll just be... annoyed at me that I haven't asked for an Irish coffee, so we'll see how we do with that.
That's one of the things we want to do next, is we want to do a book on the Irish coffee.
Very cool. Well, looking forward to reading that. Mm-hmm. Suggest all of our listeners pick up from mm-hmm. Barley to Blarney if they haven't already. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you guys. Looking forward to the new improved pints at the Dead Rabbit and
in the twice washed glasses.
nobody's ever going to know that though. Yeah, I'm
right,
telling you guys.
Right, sure. That's, nobody. Yeah. So just between us.
One of the things is, again, it goes back to what I told you about those people from Ireland, the followers on Facebook and stuff. They come to the bar in their droves and see if you've got everything right, but your pint of Guinness isn't right. They will be the first people to tell you pint of Guinness sucks. You know.
You can't have that.
Yeah, you can't have it. You can't have it.
Looking forward to that. Thank you guys for joining us today. Much appreciated. And cheers.
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 Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.